When Eddie Harris decided to canoe the entire length of the Mississippi River alone, his family and friends told him he was crazy. He'd only been in a canoe a few times in his life, and he's a young black man, so his friends feared for his safety along parts of the river. Despite the warnings, Harris felt compelled to set out on the 2,350-mile journey, starting in northern Minnesota and ending in New Orleans. Harris was a frustrated, unpublished writer when he began the trip, and out of his experience, he wrote an account called Mississippi Solo, A River Quest. I asked him to read the opening passage from his book.
The Mississippi River is laden with the burdens of a nation. Wide at St. Louis, where I grew up, the river in my memory flows brown and heavy and slow. Seemingly lazy, but always busy with barges and tugs. Always working, like my father. Always traveling. Always awesome and intimidating. I have watched this river since I was small. Too young to realize that the burdens the Mississippi carries are more than barges loaded with grain and coal. That the river carries as well sins and salvation, dreams and adventure and destiny. As a child, I feared this river and respected it more than I feared God. As an adult now, I fear it even more. I've never minded looking stupid, and I have no fear of failure. I decided to canoe down the Mississippi River and to find out what I was made of.
When you were at the headwaters of the Mississippi, it was in lake country in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't get the canoe under bridges?
Well, at the very beginning, the river's not very, very wide or very deep. And there are these little footbridges that go across. And the boat was sat too high in the water to get underneath these little bridges.
And so would you try to get the boat under the bridge?
Well, at first I tried to get the thing under the bridge by all sorts of tricky maneuvers, but none of them worked, and so I had to ultimately pull the canoe up out of the water and drag it across and around and down and back on the other side.
This might have discouraged other people as a fairly ignominious beginning to a cruise on the mighty Mississippi.
Well, that's what I thought at first, and I got stuck, as well as having had trouble with the bridges, but I got stuck in the sand because the river was so shallow. And when I sat in the canoe, there were times when it just dragged bottom. And I felt that, wow, what a way to start this trip. And considered quitting even then. And that, in fact, was the hairiest day on the river, I think. It was the longest day. It was the coldest day. It was just a brutal day. And at the end, I considered, seriously, I wondered what folly I had gotten myself into.
One of the things I've found when I've gone canoeing is how incredibly wet you can get from just the waves, from the canoe, from the paddle just constantly moving back and forth across the boat. Did you ever just get so frustrated with the water in your boat and your wet feet that you just say, I'm nuts to this? Or would you eventually become oblivious to that?
No, I never became oblivious to it, and I never got frustrated because of the water being there, but it certainly was uncomfortable. I mean, it was late fall, and the water was cold, and my toes, it seemed, were numb all day long for at least half the trip, and that was just brutal. And in the, you know, after a few hours canoeing, there was like an inch and a half of water in the back, in the stern of the canoe, which I had to pull over and bail out.
Has it occurred to you since then that there might have been other times of year that might have been a little more comfortable to go?
Well, absolutely. But two good reasons not to go in the summertime. And one is mosquitoes. And one is all the other traffic that's going to be on the river. But I wasn't that clever when I decided to take this trip. I wasn't thinking mosquitoes or anything else. I was thinking, I've got this idea now. Who knows where I'll be in 6 or 8 months? Why wait?
Uh-huh. So it was more a matter of sort of personal urgency to just do it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you left the lake country and the tiny Mississippi and it began to open up, you moved into the lock country. And somehow these locks, I guess, were designed for barges and for freighters moving enormous amounts of goods. And here you were, a tiny canoe. What was the reaction when you went through these locks and were the only boat in them at the time?
Well, initially, the very first lock I came to, which was the St. Francis upper lock in Minneapolis, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. Had no experience with locks prior to this trip, and was as scared as anybody in a canoe would be trying to get through these massive structures. But some lady came on the loudspeaker and walked me through the process and made me feel as though the Corps of Engineers actually worked for me, and I was extremely comfortable after that. So everybody else I met, most of whom said, man, what kind of a nut are you to be out here in this kind of weather on this river in a canoe? They didn't discourage me at all. And after they told me how crazy I was, they actually said things like, well, we hope you make it, good luck, and when you get to New Orleans, have a drink for us.
You took a revolver along. That was part of your kit.
Mm-hmm.
Chekhov always sort of said that if you introduce a revolver somewhere in the first act, it has to go off by the fourth act. And I'm wondering if you ever had to use it, and if so, under what circumstances, to protect yourself?
There were two circumstances, and one was a morning after a night where my tent was surrounded by a pack of wild dogs, and in the morning a couple of them came at me and I had to shoot my way out. And the other time I was in camp, and these two rednecks came staggering through, I guess, actually, because they were pretty drunk and bugging me a little bit. And I had to wave my gun and shoot a couple of rounds in their direction to get them to leave me alone.
Well, that's sort of a fairly modest description. I mean, as I recall from your chronicle, I mean, you ended up having to sort of dive, and you crashed into a boulder.
Yeah, I hit a rock.
Striking
your
chin against it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounded fairly terrifying.
Well, at the time it was, but now I try to downplay it a bit because I don't want people thinking this is some sort of adventurous. You know, the book isn't about my shooting with rednecks in Mississippi. And so I try to downplay that a bit. But both times, the wild dogs and the two rednecks, they were probably among the most scariest moments of my life.
When you were traveling through the down the Mississippi, you had to go through your hometown. Did you ever think about sort of just giving up at that point and getting out? And what kept you going? Because you were, traveling in late autumn
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Oh, that was on my mind for a long time before I got to St. Louis. And when I finally arrived there, I was absolutely sure I was going to quit. My family had come down to the river to pick me up, in fact, and I was going to put the canoe on top of the car, go home, and say that's it. But there were friends there too, waiting for me when I arrived. The same friends who had told me before I took this trip that it was a stupid thing to do. But now they were all patting me on the back and saying what a wonderful thing it was. And so partly I couldn't quit because, in a way, I had assumed their dreams as well. And to quit would have been to step on their dreams the way they were trying to step on mine in the beginning, and I didn't feel I could do that. But also, by the time I had a meal and a hot bath and a shower and a good night's sleep in my own bed, I felt I missed the river a bit and didn't want to give it up.
There was I got the sense that there was a great deal of self-doubt before you you took off on the trip to the voyage, on the trip to the Mississippi, and you wanted to find out what it was in part that you were made of, and I wonder if you found out what it is you're made of.
Well, I think I'm still trying to discover that, but uh-huh. I did find out that I'm that I can face a little adversity and come out okay. And that's partly why I took the trip, because I was in this very low period of my life, not having any success with my writing or anything else, for that matter, and attacked the river just to see how much determination and endurance I had. And that was a physical test. But it translates to, metaphorically, it translates to other aspects of my life as well. And I've been writing for 10 years without any substantial success. Until now. So I sort of took this trip, was successful there, and it seems to be leading me in the right direction with the rest of my work as well.
What's happened for you then since you've written the book?
Well, for one thing, I got the book published. And for another, the money from the trip got me to take another trip to Africa. I've just spent 8 months in Africa, just back a couple of weeks ago. And there's another book there. Excuse me. And publishers are I mean, this book has opened the door to the rest of my writing career, I think. Not only is it a book, but it's apparently a pretty decent book, and it's gotten me a lot of attention, and now the struggle to be considered a writer is no longer a great one.
Well, Eddie Harris, thank you very much for being a guest on Fresh Air with us.
Thank you.
Eddie Harris is the author of Mississippi Solo, A River Quest. It's published by Harper & Row.